Blog Talk Radio.
You got to listen to the Bob Carson Show. It's about the real deal. And this is Les Leopold, the author of Runaway Inequality, An Activist Guide to Economic Justice.
Hi, this is Stuart A. Cuff with Utility Workers Union of America, asking you to tune in every time you can to Bob Carson's Carson's Corner, one of the best pro-labor shows in America. We love it at Utility Workers. We love it across the AFL-CIO, and we're grateful to Bob for coming on and holding up our issues and holding up our principles and values.
I'm Andrew Craig. I'm an investigative reporter and attorney based in Washington, and I'm the author of Presidential Puppetry, Obama, Romney, and Their Masters. And I want to encourage everyone to support, listen to, and talk about the Carson's Corner show in New Jersey, which is a pioneering, courageous, and apt voice for progressives in New Jersey that I first came to know in 2009, when he was the pioneering and virtually unique media outlet willing to take on Chris Christie, dig deep, and look at how he had come to power and how he was misusing it. And 4 years, 5 years later here, that's all come to pass.
Hi, this is David K. Johnston, and you're listening to Carson's Corner with Bob Carson.
Hi, this is Harry Kaysen, member supporter of the Zeitgeist Movement. As Zeitgeist members, we know that it is virtually impossible to find sources in the media that speak truth to power. Well, Carson's Corner does just that, and it is one of those special places where you can find out what is really going on, not just what the bosses want you to know and think. So listen in and hear some truth at Carson's Corner. And oh, by the way, be sure to check out all the Zeitgeist and Zeitgeist-related films you can find on YouTube. We've got a world to save.
This is Greg Palin, reporter for BBC Television and Democracy Now, and author of the new book, Vulture's Picnic, In Pursuit of Petroleum Pigs, Power Pirates, and High Finance Carnivores. And you're listening to Carson's Corner on 5:30 a.m. Underground Progressive Radio, radio for the 99%. Help us occupy the airwaves and support Carson's Corner and support 5:30 Underground Progressive Radio.
Hey, this is Frank Schaefer, author, writer, New York Times bestseller. But I'm here today because I've got a new book called Why I'm an Atheist Who Believes in God. And I'm also on Carson's Corner because corporate media is so one-dimensional in terms of the kind of things they cover that they couldn't comprehend a discussion that would begin with a statement that implies a huge paradox. But I think there's a lot of thinking people out there who understand that life is paradoxical, and Carson's Corner is one of those places you can discuss it. So thanks for being with us.
Good evening, listeners, and welcome to Carson's Corner with the Election Boycott Advocates. This is your co-host, Chris Driscoll, and along with me tonight is our illustrious show founder, Bob Carson, and our latest addition to the show, Rainer Shea, brilliant young Marxist journalist. And we've got a special episode for you tonight. That's why we're appearing here on Friday instead of the normal Monday. We will be back on Monday, this coming Monday, but a special episode tonight focused on the COVID-19 pandemic, socialist responses versus capitalist responses, the impact of COVID-19 on the United States and everywhere else in the world, really, is looking like it's going to turn into something big, something frightening, something disastrous, and there are countries that are responding to this pandemic in a rational, efficient, effective way, and ones that are not. I'm sure everyone in the, who lives in the United States will know about how it turns out if you're in a country that does not respond to it in a rational way. And we're here to talk about that. So first of all, let's bring in Bob Carson and Brainerd Shea. How are you guys?
Hello. I'm quarantined in California right now, but
yes.
I'm doing lots of research into this this COVID-19 business and its context within American imperialism. And as I might elaborate on throughout this show, I'm seeing a lot of parallels to 9/11 in every way.
Yeah. I think you're right there, Rainer. And Rainer, for people who don't follow his work but should, Rainer's got a stupendous article out on the subject. It is called, where do we have this? A coronavirus bail, a coronavirus bailout will save corporations, not workers. Oh, no, you know what? That's the one from Richard Wolf.
Yeah.
I'm looking here on dandelionsalad.wordpress.com, and Lo Daniels has you, Rainer, shoved in with Richard Wolf. And Richard Wolf's response to this, which was on RT, was brilliant as well. But no, let's see, the 2020 coronavirus economic crash and the crisis of capitalism. That's the one by Rainer, and people should go check that out. Rainer, we've got a topic here, topic number 3, the economic fallout from the pandemic. And I'm going to ask you to begin on that topic, topic number 3, and go into a little bit about what was in your article then, which I was a brilliant article as always, and spot on, as they say in Britain, in Great Britain, spot on, Rainer. Before we go on, I heard Bob coughing in the background. And, of course, Rainer talked about California. I saw this last night. Governor Gavin Newsom was on the tube announcing a shutdown, basically, of California, telling everyone to stay home. I don't know how that affects students like you, Rainer, but it's a big deal. I'm not surprised that Gavin Newsom was one of the first to do that. Several other states actually have something similar going on. Pennsylvania and New Jersey, where Bob is. Bob can tell us about that. And Bob, why don't you come on in and touch base with us here? How you doing? I heard you coughing. I hope that was just a joke, but come on in.
Yeah. Yeah. Thanks. No, I was being, I was being a little facetious there. I was kind of making light of all these closures. But I, not that this is not serious, obviously. But listen, I'm soon to be quarantined. We technically have more cases than California. And I think they will. My governor here has been following the tri-state area governors of New York and Connecticut in closing down businesses on the moment's notice. It is, I think, a matter of time before they close us down. Put a shelter in place for everybody, and everything's screeching to a halt here. It's very, very depressing. The universities are closed. The schools are closed, many of them till next month. And soon to follow, everything. They just recently opened up the first state's testing facility up in Bergen County, where there's a majority of the cases are up in Bergen County near New York City. They opened up one near me in the PNC Art Bank Center. Drive-through testing facilities. Just now, they're just opening up these facilities, and so now they're just getting around to testing only a handful of New Jerseyans. So we're going to see this number rise, and we're going to see the ensuing panic. And as we catch up to the rest of the world, as we're going to discuss later on today, is there an echo?
Yeah.
By the way,
no echo. If you're hearing it, it's only on your end. No echo there. You're coming in fine. Pretty good, actually, for Skype. And as you know, I really don't like Skype much. But you're coming in pretty good this time.
Good.
Better than you do over your crappy phone that you need to get rid of. Anyway, topic number two for the night. I just had topic number one being an introduction, but I think we ought to launch right into topic number
two.
Panic. Pardon me? Didn't hear that part, Bob. Well, anyway. Topic number two, panic in America after Trump sits on his hands for months. Oh, there Bob is. What did you say, Bob? We're not getting Bob. Chalk it up to the FBI. Anyway, Bob, just chime in when you get through. I don't know. Panic in America, and Trump sits on his hands for months, not preparing. And as a matter of fact, he did the even worse than not preparing. He actually put the kibosh deliberately on preparing tests for months, thinking that it would send the stock market into a panic, which. You know, obviously, these idiots who gamble in the stock market casino, they panic. Now we've got people all over the country panicking. You look at grocery store shelves; they're empty in many cases. My daughter just went out Tuesday, I think it was, or maybe it was Monday. On Tuesday. She just went out on Tuesday to the store and came home. No milk, sorry, no milk there, no eggs. There was a whole bunch of items that just, and this was our local Walmart that she goes to. I don't know how it's been all over the country, but here in Phoenix, we're really having a run on the stores. People are, as people run out to get emergency stuff that they probably should have. On hand anyway, without ever having to go to the, store at the last moment. But people these days they expect just in time delivery, and they probably keep a just in time pantry where they've only got what they what they need for the last moment. And I think a lot of that has to do with the economy, with the wretched. Depression level economy over the last year. So, real panic here in America. America's obviously not prepared for this. Gavin Newsom last night said that he expects 25 million Californians to be infected with this disease before it's all over. And I don't think that's a bad estimate. You know, you look at the numbers. People who are in the know, virologists, doctors who study this stuff, study the path of viruses, they tell you the numbers, and if you apply those numbers to what's going on right now, we're really looking at the possibility of something really enormous. It is frightening. As Rayner points out in his brilliant article, there are a lot of steps we as working-class Americans can take implement solutions, to demand that solutions are implemented, and ultimately to take power, because that's what this is really all about. The problem that we have in America is one of who owns the state. In America, the capitalist class, a tiny, tiny class, a cabal practically, not even much of a class anymore because it's been made so small through monopolization. You look at the number of billionaires, there's less than 600 billionaires in the United States, and they have tremendously more power than all the rest of us combined. That is the problem, and they control the state in America. We don't. I don't mean, individual states of the union. I mean the state, the federal state that actually controls this country. They control that state. And if we lived in China, the working class would be the people who own the state. A grand majority, almost close to a billion people, probably more than a billion people, control the state in China. But here, less than 600 people actually are ultimately in control of the state. That's what we really have to get down to in this. So, anyway, anybody else, guys, on the panic we've been seeing and Trump sitting on his hands and doing nothing?
I'm observing in my next article that this crisis has a lot of similarities to 9/11, both in terms of the atmosphere in America and in terms of the uncomfortable fogginess of its origins, because the official narrative seems to be that China is responsible, but there's compelling evidence that it originated within the United States, and it's entirely possible that the United States engineered this crisis as a bioweapon, and so now we're seeing how capitalists are trying to take advantage of the crisis, and how this is being used to escalate the hybrid war on China, and how the cultural impacts of COVID-19 are being used for social control and psyops. So we're seeing an event similar in cultural impact to 9/11 that's going to create a new normal for those living in the imperial core.
Okay, Bob, are you with us? Not sure that we even still have Bob with us. There he is.
Well, I have a lot to say. I mean, and, you know, I don't want to get... can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
And there may be a little delay here. Okay.
We hear you. You're coming in great now. Go for it.
There's a little delay on my end, but first on Trump's response, it's just been absolutely very, very slow, just kind of egregious on the one hand. I did have an opportunity to listened to his initial press conference, the major address to the nation last week, and it was filled with pats on his back about how great he is, how great his response was, blah blah blah. He was out. He called it a hoax initially. He said he was one of the first presidents to initiate a ban from China, a travel ban, but he didn't, have a travel ban really because we got the virus, essentially from China, if you believe the government reports, which I think there's credible evidence that it originated from Wuhan, China, and whatnot, and. His response, Christopher, you mentioned that the resistance to testing now, we don't know because the incubation period on this is so scary. That's the frightening part, is that there's been estimates that it's 2 to 14 days, 6 to 11 days, whatever it is, it's greater than the flu. And so that's why it's conceivable that you can get, 25 million people in California if there's no restrictions. Infected, and why they can have such a huge part of the population infected. I'm not worried about it because, my doctor told me everybody's getting it. It's the flu. You may even have it at this point, but, you could be asymptomatic or have no symptoms at all. And not, I mean, obviously for certain people, the population, it's going to be it's gonna be problematic for underlying health conditions and whatnot. It's very, very serious and whatnot. But Trump's response, our response, and the irony is that we hear how great this country is and how, capitalism is great, America. And, look, there's a certain amount of ingenuity in America. We all love America in our own ways, and there's a certain greatness about the working class and this indomitable spirit that we have. But look at the scarcity now. I was talking about this a week ago, 2 weeks ago. You've got people now hoarding supplies. You go to a grocery store, you can't find anything. I can't even get the hand sanitizer. I have hand sanitizer, but I can't get cleaning supplies. And it's going to get worse. Take my word for it. When they do lock out, the New York Times estimating that 1 in 5 Americans are going to be lockdown, which I think is very, very conceivable. You're going to have a real shortage of supplies. Nobody's prepared. Nobody knows what they're doing. Government, Trump does not know what he's doing here. Are they going to quarantine people for what length of time until they get a vaccine? Nobody knows. They have a press conference every 5 seconds. It's a different time frame. The governor here in New Jersey, he announces, within a couple hours that businesses are closing. It's very reactionary. Nobody has a plan. Everybody's panicking. And we're going to talk about this a little later on. The economy is in for an absolute meltdown, the likes of which I've never seen, the likes of which that make the Great Recession, look like an economic boom. That's what's going to happen now. And we really have to discuss this because, I don't think it's appropriate to shut down everything. I think that's a conversation that we can have. But there's no question that the United States has not handled this properly, even though, we have been warned since, January of this year, and nothing has happened. Other countries, South Korea, Japan, did not have this because they've approached their economy differently, they approach things differently, and we really, really have to discuss this. And people need to hear this from an alternative viewpoint because I've been listening to a lot of talk radio, right wing talk radio, because I need information in times like this. I tend to get very, very panicky a little bit myself, although I calm down and whatnot. And it's all partisanship. It's all this guy is good and this guy is bad. It's all partisanship. Yeah. But I got to say, some of the things that Trump proposed and has proposed, as far as a stimulus package to the working class, $1,200 two times for individuals, I believe, making $75,000 and under, a suspension of the payroll tax, an economic stimulus bill, $850 billion, so on and so forth. Obviously, it's not enough, but it's admirable, in his intent to try to stimulate the economy. But if everything's shut down and you get $1,000, a $1,200 check, and maybe another $1,200 check in due time, where are you going to spend that, number one? And, you know, what does that mean? Unemployment is overloaded now. I mean, in New Jersey, shut down. Now it's back on track. It's overloaded. So many people are filing for unemployment. You know, we're printing money. You know, all these questions have to be addressed here, you know, which really kind of shows the limits of our economic system. So.
Yeah, and Bob, you've given us a good segue into the topic number three, the economic fallout from the COVID-19 pandemic. Bank of America declared today that we are in a deep recession. That's a direct quote from Bank of America's statement, deep recession. Goldman Sachs today came out with a statement predicting a 24% reduction in the GDP next quarter. Richard Wolf, who's one of America's probably the most popular and famous Marxist economist in America, although, you know, I think he's a lot more of a social democrat, to tell you the truth. But anyway, he is an uneducated Marxist. He knows Marxism, even if he doesn't always follow it, and a lot of times he doesn't. So there I get my criticisms of Richard Wolff out. But Richard Wolff says, and I agree with him, that this is unlike anything we've seen in American history, and we should be prepared for it. He said he expects the economic downturn to be worse, not just worse than 2008, which was bad enough, but worse than the Great Depression of the 1930s. And I agree with him. I mean, who knows how long this will last? I mean, you know, the American Democrat and Republican leadership during that time, the first couple of years it was Hoover, a Republican, and the next several years it was FDR, a Democrat. But in both cases, they were clueless about what to do to respond to a deep, dark depression, which is what that was. I think when Bank of America says deep recession, you should just throw the word recession right out the window. It's not a fucking recession. It's a depression, straight up. That's what we're headed for. That's what we're heading into. And Bob and I have been predicting this for quite some time, for the last 3 years at least, because we kept expecting business cycle to go as it normally does, you know, to have a recession every 4 to 7, 8 years. Even at the longest, it's never been more than 10 years that the United States went without a recession. So, I mean, you don't have to be a Marxist scholar to figure out that we were headed for an economic downturn. The problem here is that they have done so much wrong, and I'll get into that, but they've done so much wrong in this economy over the last several decades, over the last 4 decades at least, that it has left the economy ripe for a really disastrous economic downturn. Now, at this point, I want to bring in Rainer, because as I mentioned before, Rainer wrote a stupendous article talking about analyzing the economic fallout of the COVID-19 pandemic. Just want to give Rainer a platform here to talk about that article and what he said in it. And anything else, Rainer, that you want to throw in there. We will be, of course, talking more about the where this COVID-19 virus really originated. I think it originated in the laboratories of the U.S. Army, but we'll get to that on topic number six. So, let's hear from you now, Rainer.
In this article, I talk about how, amid this great crisis of capitalism, the U.S. government is responding not in the way that say China's government has responded to it, because China's response was very well thought out. They knew exactly how much they should impose quarantines. They allocated so much resources towards quickly addressing the crisis, and now it's seemingly pretty much defeated in China, despite China's population being so much larger than the U.S. And in contrast, the U.S. government's healthcare system, first of all, is in such bad shape from decades of austerity and corporate healthcare that as the virus has spread to the U.S., the part of the danger has been that America's healthcare system is at risk of being broken, and right from the start, partly as a result of America's inadequate healthcare system, and partly as a result of Trump's negligence, the system hasn't been able to properly detect and assess and respond to the emergence of these cases, and now as the virus puts much of the economy into a standstill, the system isn't really able to address how this is impacting people's lives, and there are these sporadic efforts to quarantine some people, maybe quarantine others, and there's also attempts to address how it's impacting people's lives by policies like suspending evictions, like becoming more lenient on crimes, suspending broadband suspension, or I think something like that. Anyway, there's this capitalist system isn't able to coherently or sufficiently address the impact that this virus is having, both in terms of health and in terms of the economy, and so we're increasingly going to be seeing efforts to crack down on potential unrest. It's clear that the ruling class in America is worried about unrest. I point out in the article that there's been a demand for private jets and an exodus among the super rich to their secluded second homes, and the National Security Council, the military, the intelligence community have been quietly heading the U.S. government's overall response to the crisis, and as the virus continues to proliferate, as this one article from Whitney Webb I quoted pointed out, the American intelligence community expects a much greater new outbreak to emerge in the coming weeks. As this outbreak proliferates, the state is going to crack down in ways comparable to the 9/11 aftermath. And what will that crackdown look like? It may look like more surveillance, like more censorship, like more of a police presence. Already there are troops being used to try to send aid to people and in major cities, and who knows at what point these troops will be used to maintain order. On a different note, there's indications of class warfare in places like the Hamptons, where all of these upscale people have been really abusing their privilege and acting irresponsibly towards others in their community by massively hoarding supplies, by feeling entitled to freely go about the community and endanger public safety, and the poor people are being left behind. And that's where my suggestions for counteraction come in. That's where the potential for a mass strike comes in. I believe that people need to carry out this April rent strike. They need to participate in the general strike that's being planned for April 2nd. They need to participate in this year's May Day strike. And beyond that, I'm open to more suggestions, because now is kind of a challenging time for revolutionary agitators, given how protesting is now illegal. And we need ways to try to destabilize the system and use our leverage to try to, first of all, get our demands enacted for basic living arrangement throughout the crisis. We're hoping for universal health care, for a continued suspension of evictions, for expanded social programs. And if we don't get these demands for living standards met, we're going to have to continue agitating and ultimately try to overthrow this government, because this government is not willing to meet our needs, and the only real alternative is to replace it with a dictatorship of the proletariat. This is and that's the system that China, Vietnam, and Cuba have. China, Vietnam, and Cuba, these socialist countries, have been responding to the crisis so well, and hopefully it becomes more apparent in the coming years that their model of governance is what we need to seek out. Hopefully the upside of this crisis is that more people are becoming class conscious. Would you agree that more people have been turning away from capitalism as a result of this crisis?
Yeah, I think that's going to find that that's definitely true. My opinion, anyway. I don't know where Bob's at on that, what you've seen Bob being out in New Jersey. Yep, nothing from Bob. Dead air. Okay, there he is.
I think maybe in the aftermath, not maybe immediately, I think people are just, caught up in the hysteria right now.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there's definitely some of that. The one thing I want to compliment Rayner on in that article, unlike most critics of capitalism, most critics of capitalism just do their criticism, that's it. They leave it there. They don't offer solutions. They don't offer action plans. And Rainer, in this article, Rainer appeals to people to give him more ideas, and that's always good. But Rainer leaves people with an action plan. Get out. You know, he says as soon as we hit the recovery stage, hit the streets. Get out and protest. Build the momentum. Be like Chile in the last year, or, you know, so Ecuador, several other countries in Latin America, where the protest movements really were impactful. In Chile, it was to the point where the government of Chile had to flee the capital city because they couldn't stand the heat. So, yeah, I mean, that's always important for any Marxist critique of capitalism. We need to leave people with that idea of, with those ideas of the solutions and the action plan, what we need to do to achieve something better, you know, take down the state ultimately. Okay, Rainer, anything more on this topic?
Not that I can think of.
Okay, I just wanted to point out, yesterday was the first day in China that there were no new cases of COVID-19 identified throughout the country. So that was a big milestone for China. It shows that China is definitely, on the winning side here of beating this this thing, whether it's an attack or a natural virus. I personally think that it is a man-made virus. We'll be talking about that in topic number six. But, yeah, so, you know, things are on the up and up in China, where the government was prepared and where the government did what a government should do, where the Communist Party led in active solutions to the problems that the people faced. The United States, the government, is way late and a dollar short, several trillion dollars short, I'd say, in solutions. They still haven't gotten solutions. They're still talking about, you know, kind of throwing crumbs from the table of the ruling class to the working class, and, you know, like a $1,200 check. You know, that how long is that going to last when you're out of a job and looking for a job? The unemployment system in the United States. Right. Unemployment insurance system is certainly going to be overloaded and not prepared for this kind of a depression-level economic collapse, economic downturn, meltdown, whatever you want to call it. They are not prepared. And that brings us to topic number four, socialist versus capitalist nations. COVID-19 provides proves the superiority of socialism and the mediocrity of capitalism. Capitalism is really the problem here, not the solution. So let's talk about that. We've had some comments already in this episode leading to this same conclusion, but you know, let's just talk about what have been the responses of the socialist countries versus the capitalist countries, do they indeed, as I posit here, prove the superiority of socialism and the mediocrity of capitalism? Capitalism is really the problem. So, guys.
Oh, I don't know too much about the specifics of these policies, but clearly China and Cuba have.
I think we're seeing this.
Oh, we talked at the same time. It sounds like you have better insight. What are you trying to say?
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Rainer.
Oh, well, basically that China and Cuba have emerged as these paragons of good responses to the virus, and the United States, America's healthcare system is so clearly inadequate compared to that, and American imperialism is also harming the ability for Americans and the world to adequately respond to this crisis. America's economic embargo has seemingly made Cuba's antiviral instruments inaccessible to Americans, and the United States has also been exploiting this crisis to blockade Venezuelans from getting emergency aid and blocking Iranians from getting resources. And this is cold, heinous logic used by the U.S. imperialists. And we're seeing the U.S. engage in these activities, China has emerged as seemingly the main world helper in this crisis, as they've beaten back the virus within their homeland. They're helping countries around the world, and this is naturally improving China's stand in the world compared to the United States.
Yeah, China, as an example, sent hundreds of doctors who were involved in the fighting back the COVID-19 pandemic in China. They sent them today to Italy. They landed in Italy. They brought loads of medical supplies along with them to help with the crisis in Italy. And apparently now, by some measures, Italy is the place where it's hit the most besides China. Cuba is also showing this kind of internationalist solidarity, sending doctors to many countries. I had to laugh. I think I sent you guys this article about Cuba and Brazil. When Bolsonaro became president, you know, he's this right-wing fascistic president of Brazil. And the first thing he did was kick out all the Cuban doctors who were in Brazil at the invitation of the socialist government that preceded Bolsonaro, and kicked them all out. Now Bolsonaro is begging Cuba to send back the doctors. That's an indication. But in many countries, Cuban doctors have been sent out or are already there giving aid, helping to fight this pandemic. So that's an example of a socialist response that we're not seeing in America. We're not seeing American doctors being sent by the government all over the world to help out in this crisis. America certainly has more doctors than are needed, and some of these people could be out there helping in other parts of the world, but they're not. The whole response by the Cuban government, by the Chinese government, by the Vietnamese government, for example, by the North Korean government, other countries that have socialist workers' states in which the workers are in control, in the driver's seat. The workers collectively do run the state. In those countries, the response has been just incredible to me. The organization, the discipline, the getting resources exactly where those resources are needed. That's the value of a socialist state where the state is run by the workers to benefit all people in the country. That's what should be happening. That's a shining example of the response that should be taking place in any country. That kind of disciplined efficiency, that kind of disciplined effectiveness to beating a crisis and beating a crisis. And that's why China, where this virus first appeared, seems to already have surmounted the worst difficulties of the crisis. While the United States, as a counterexample, which is a few months behind in the viral curve, the virus infection curve, but it really looks like the United States is just totally unprepared in every way. You've got this buffoon standing at the head of the U.S. government, who pats himself on the back more than he addresses real problems, and he is really just not addressing real problems. Most of what the U.S. Congress and the president have done in response to the economic disaster has been simply to save big business. To shower helicopter money on big business and the big banks. The amount of money, trillions, I mean, literally, it's going to amount to trillions of dollars that they are showering down on these same criminal corporations that ten to 12 years ago had trillions of dollars showered down upon them, and they collected that money and put it in their pocket. Many of them used the money to buy back stock of their own corporations to, you know, enrich themselves. They didn't put that money, they didn't invest that money into new production, which is what has been really needed to get us out of this decade-long depression that we've been in, and now we're going into a deeper depression. As far as I'm concerned, looking at it from a working-class perspective, we've been in a depression for 12 years now, and we're right now getting ready to go into a super depression. Even more than a Great Depression is a super depression. That's what we're entering because we here in America and throughout Europe, in South America and Africa and many other places, we have allowed this criminal organization, the capitalist ruling class of America, to run a globe-spanning empire that has always put the profits of the rich above the needs of the many. The needs of the few, that is, profits for the rich, has always been first in their responses. And that's the way it's continuing to go today. Yeah. We really, as Rainer said earlier, we really need to collectively get together as a class, the working class in America. We need to get together and put a stop to this criminality We see this criminality in so many different ways. I want to point out to Aaron Mate from the video show Pushback, which you can get on thegrayzone.com. He had a former UN rapporteur on his show talking today about U.S. sanctions against other countries. And this guy was a UN representative, a rapporteur for a long time, and he was a specialist in sanctions. And what he said today on this show was just astounding to me, and every American should hear this. He said the U.S. sanctions against, especially against Iran and Venezuela today, are genocidal. That was the word he used. And, of course, when you get into a country doing actions against another country, war actions, against another country that are genocidal, that is a crime against humanity. That is a war crime. The United States government, he said, is guilty of attempting genocide against the Iranian and Venezuelan people. And he talked about how there are many, many other countries where the United States is applying these criminal sanctions. In my opinion, these sanctions are war, plain and simple. You know, it's hybrid, asymmetrical warfare, but this is these are an act of war, and in this case, these are a genocidal act of war, especially against Iran and Venezuela. Iran cannot even buy the medicines and medical apparatus it needs to fight this thing, and Iran is like number one or number two of the nations in the world right now with COVID-19 cases. This is pure genocidal. President Trump, President Obama, President George W. Bush and President Clinton should all be standing trial for genocide in The Hague, in my opinion, and also in the opinion of this rapporteur, the guy who knows, the guy who has studied sanctions around the world. And that was his conclusion, that American officials who are guilty of these crimes against humanity should be standing trial for it and hopefully convicted and put in jail for the rest of their lives. Personally, if I had my druthers, if I was the dictator of the world, I would convict these criminals and then execute them. But you know, the UN, under UN laws, United Nations laws, you can't execute these criminals, so we'll have to just settle for putting them in prison for the rest of their lives. That's what I'd like to see. That's what should be done. These people are simply criminals. So.
Well, you know,
exactly.
Going back to this question about you know, capitalism, and going back to, you know, what we're discussing is how we stack up, how the United States stacks up. I think ultimately we're going to see how we end up economically. The response, you know, China, as we pointed out, has under control. And let's not forget, too, that we here in the United States are not as densely populated as China, as Italy. So we have a bit of an advantage just geographically here to deal with this. And yet, It seems that despite the fact that there's warnings, despite the fact that there's a huge body of water that separates us from these other countries, the response of the United States is purely based on capitalist principles. As I pointed out, we lag behind significantly in testing, which means that the incubation period is looming large, and other people are being infected now as we speak. Supplies, we're hearing now from our governors in my tri-state area and mayors that the hospital supplies are going to be running out in weeks. In a matter of weeks, we're not going to have a hospital place. Can you hear me? I can hear you. We're also hearing that they need hospital beds. That I can hear you. Can you hear me? Hello?
Hello?
I can hear you.
Get cut off?
I don't know, Bob. I was hearing you, and then all of a sudden we don't hear you anymore. Are you still there?
Yeah. Well, what was the last thing you heard? Because I just heard Rainer say hello twice.
Yeah, but I was still hearing you when he was saying hello, hello. So
okay,
you got
so I don't
ring him. There's definitely something wrong with Skype. Rainer, you still there? Now I'm not hearing either one of you guys. I'm not hearing either one. Okay. Well, while those guys are missing, just chime in, guys, if you can, if we can hear you. Well, I guess we're not going to be hearing those guys. So, this coronavirus has implications in so many ways. It's affecting so many lives here in the United States and everywhere else in the world. The response, in my opinion, the response by working people, by through our unions, through any organizations that we have, and we need to create new organizations to address these problems. Ultimately, as Rainer suggested in his article, we need to be hitting the streets as soon as we are able. This virus will work its way through, and we will get through it. But all the economic implications here, economic disaster here that we've got, is far reaching, and we've got to start now organizing to be able to meet this economic attack on the working class, first of all with strikes, ultimately, hopefully, with successful general strikes, and with street protests, with street actions. That's the way it's been done in the going. So, Rainer,
I've gotten disconnected a couple times.
There you go.
Yeah, something's weird going on. Chris, you're coming in and out too, on my end at least. Yeah,
okay,
Rainer's
gone.
Rainer dropped. Yeah, yeah, I can hear. I got about 10 minutes, Chris, before I got to go into work. Just so you know.
Okay, so just go on with that. You were cut off.
Okay.
Go on with what we're.
Yeah. I mean, and we're seeing this already. Again, a shortage of supplies, a surge for the hospitals. Now, in New York, they're looking for empty hospitals, hospitals that were closed down. They're talking about sending the National Guard to set up hospitals. FEMA has already been deployed at sites now to administer food. This is, you know, it's going to get a lot worse as this prolongs. And as I said, the Trump administration talks about stretching this out for 18 months. This could go, the lockdowns could go until June, July. Nobody knows what's going on. There's no plan. And this is, again, this is indicative of a fragmented, you know, system, for-profit system, in which, you know, human needs are not addressed. You know, there's some good things and that people are doing and charity work and whatnot, but at the end of the day, we're seeing scarcity right now, and we're seeing the entire economy shut down, and we're just beginning this ordeal here. And as I said earlier, we're going to see how we compare. We talked about Cuba. Well, Cuba is taking ships. Cuba is purposely taking COVID patients instead of, you know, quarantining them indefinitely. Cuba is sending doctors all over the world, just like they've done in other you know, natural disasters. Japan doesn't have nearly the amount of cases and fatalities because they're administering drugs to their patients without any type of a pharmaceutical imposed backlog that we have here in the United States. You know, South Korea, same thing. You know, contain this this virus and not nearly the amount of effect. So, you know, we're seeing capitalism in action right now. I think Rainer's back. Well, now Rainer dropped off again.
Oh no, that's too bad. Yeah. Maybe he'll call back. Yeah, Bob, I agree with you full-heartedly. Let's jump right to topic number six. I hope you still have a few minutes before you have to leave.
Sure.
Where did this novel coronavirus really come from? Now, there was a big controversy this week online among friends of mine on Facebook because Cynthia McKinney, presidential candidate a few times, six-term congresswoman from Atlanta who is now retired, but retired from Congress, but definitely not retired. She's definitely an activist. Mm-hmm. And she put out a thing basically, you know, saying that she thought it was totally possible that this COVID-19 virus was created in American military laboratories and deliberately used as a chemical biological warfare attack on China. I agree with her. I mean, I think that they did this. I don't think that they really thought about the fact that you know, Chinese people travel all over the world, including to the United States. So if they deliberately infect, there's Rainer. There you go, Rainer.
I got disconnected several times. It's not my fault. I don't know what the hell's going on. I'm very agitated.
I think it's just something faulty with Blog Talk Radio, but we'll have to investigate it further. In the meantime, Rainer, we're talking about where did this novel coronavirus come from. I was just relating that Cynthia McKinney had started a big controversy, at least among my friends on Facebook, by saying that she thought it was totally possible that this was used as a biological warfare attack by the United States, created by the United States, a virus created by the United States and used as an attack on China. I agree with her 100% that that is something we should definitely be investigating further. Some Chinese officials, a couple anyway, have mentioned that they feel the same way. I hope that China is doing everything it can to get to the bottom of this and trace where the actual origin of this most likely man-made virus comes from. In my opinion, it came from the laboratories of the U.S. military. Anyway, I want just before Bob leaves, because he only has a few minutes, I wanted to give Bob a chance to respond. I've talked in the past about a lot of the, you know, I think there's some really good evidence out there. Go ahead, Bob.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I appreciate it, Chris. You know, the truth is I have a general feeling that this is way too coincidental, way too transmittable to believe the official CDC story of it being transferred from animal to human in China, in Wuhan, you know, from some, you know, market, some food market. I don't buy that because of the election coming up, because of all the stuff. So, you know, I want to keep my eye open or my mind open. I want to see the investigation. I nothing would surprise me in this day and age if it came from the U.S. military, if it came from researchers in Boston, nothing would surprise you. But it definitely seems to be a little bit too potent to be, and a little bit too coincidental for it to be some sort of a natural phenomenon, for crying out loud, or, something that we're seeing here. So I want to see where the evidence takes us here. And you know what? Even if the evidence does take us in a particular situation, something like this will be suppressed undoubtedly in the media. We're already seeing propaganda now against the Chinese, they're calling the Chinese virus or whatever it is. You know, Trump.
That's what Trump
seems
does.
To be, an effort to really, really attack China and try to almost launch us into a world. Could we see a war? Is this the beginning of a war between the United States and China? So these are just things to really watch out for. Which certainly we don't want that to happen for sure. But you know, who knows?
Yeah, Rainer.
Oh yes. I've been studying this issue a little bit, and I see the evidence of how it's not really plausible that the virus originated in China, and it's clear that it could only have originated outside of China and could only plausibly have originated within the United States, because the United States has been known to have all the threads of coronaviruses that could have branched out into Wuhan. And one theory is that the virus was transmitted to China accidentally through troops at an event, but clearly, it's entirely possible that it was a malicious act of biowarfare, because the United States has used biowarfare to advance its foreign policy goals in the past, by introducing diseases in countries like Cuba, the Chinese and Iranian officials have already been pointing out that it's pretty clear the virus originated within the United States, and they are asking questions of the United States. And I think in the coming years it'll become more apparent that this virus came from the United States for whatever purpose or intention. It's kind of like 9/11, where the enemy of the day was blamed for the attacks. Saddam Hussein was supposedly connected to the attacks, and most people believed that for a while. But as the years have gone by, it's become more apparent 9/11's connections to the Saudis, its connections to Mossad, all these inconsistencies in the official narrative have appeared, and it's the same as the case for coronavirus. I'm not sure how much we can call it this, what we're talking about, a conspiracy theory.
Yeah, it's not. To me, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's just a bunch of facts about how the American government has acted. China has absolutely no record ever of using biological warfare against anybody. Meanwhile, the American government has a consistent record going back at least to the Korean War. The Americans used biological attacks on North Korea, on the communist government there, and the communist working class, the communist people in North Korea. This is well proven, in my opinion. Americans still refute the idea that they used biological warfare there. But go back to the Native Americans. What did the Americans do? They were English then, but the Americans, hundreds of years prior to the establishment of the United States of America, they were using biological warfare against the Native Americans in the United States. I wanted to point out an article on thegreenvillepost.com. That's GREANVILLE post.com. The article came out on March 16th. It's called "Is the Global Pandemic a Product of the Elite's Malthusian Agenda in the U.S. Bio War and U.S. Bio Warfare?" Well, the first part of this argument, the Malthusian agenda, I think is kind of ridiculous, to tell you the truth. However, I'm not sure where this article comes from, because they don't apparently have an author posted here. However, that's the name of the article. The great part about this article is that it goes into the long history of U.S. biological warfare, going back at least to the Korean War in the modern era, although the Americans have used biological warfare even long before they became a country. So anyway, I wanted to suggest that people read this. It's a great just review of different biological attacks the American government has used, like the ones that they used against the North Koreans during the Korean War, 1950 to 1953. They used the same tactic all over the world, and so why should we be surprised at all if we find, which I think we will ultimately, that this current virus having, the epidemic having started in China, there's no dispute of that, that this virus outbreak, this pandemic, was an act of war on the Chinese people. As I suggested earlier, the United States is using sanctions as a genocidal weapon against Iran and against Venezuela and many other countries. So the idea that the United States would break international law, violate international law by using biological warfare is not at all surprising. Looks like we've lost Bob Rainer. Are you still with us?
Yes.
Yeah. So, Rainer, any other thoughts on the coronavirus, the novel coronavirus? Where did it come from?
Oh, I don't really know anything else about it, other than that. Apparently, some Russian experts have been looking into it, and they've been looking into the possibility, raising the possibility that it originated within the United States and that it was man-made. I don't remember the name of this Russian scientist who's suggested that it's man-made, but naturally the United States has tried to deflect from this explosive hole in its narrative about the virus by trying to say that all of these accusations are conspiracy theories, that they're disinformation promoted by Russia, China. So that's the obstacle we need to overcome. I've encountered Americans recently who were convinced that China is solely responsible for this virus. And I'm seeing an impulse among patriotic Americans to scapegoat the Communist Party of China for the virus, and obviously for them it'll never be plausible that the United States is actually behind it. So it's a battle of narratives.
Well, there will always be those diehards who refuse to look at the truth, to look the truth in the eye and accept it. I didn't want to get too much into this, and because I've already in other shows in recent weeks, I've already explained how scientists who have looked at this virus find unique elements of the virus that could only have been man-made. For instance, the fact that there are elements in the DNA of this virus, there are elements of the HIV virus that attack the immune system. So this virus not only infects the body, but also attacks the immune system, which makes it more difficult to recover and makes it a longer recovery than we would be getting with most viruses. So that's one element of that clearly shows this is man-made. The other element, of course, is the fact that it is well known, it is public information that DARPA, the U.S. Department of Defense's main laboratories, doing weapons, exotic weapons development, has been developing coronaviruses from bats, basically derived from bats. So yes, in a way, it does come from animals, but it comes from animals because in laboratories they created this. The DARPA actually asked for and received a patent on a novel coronavirus derived from bats in 2015. Now, that alone should tell you that at the very least, the U.S. media should be investigating this. If these were real journalists, if they weren't fake journalists putting out fake news and acting as stenographers for the American state, they would be investigating this. Any self-respecting journalist should be saying, yes, this is something that definitely needs to be investigated. And yet, no, they are not investigating it. They are calling it a conspiracy theory, quote unquote, and urging Americans not to listen to it because it's a conspiracy theory. Did it ever occur to these dimwits that claim to be journalists that some conspiracies are real and that this one has the fact that DARPA has been developing novel strains of the coronavirus for years and even got a patent for it? It's just astounding to me. But, you know, that's why we need alternative media such as ourselves, Rainer. So, Rainer, that kind of brings us to an end, unless you have something else you want to bring up or some other aspect of this COVID-19 pandemic that you would like to bring up.
I've been thinking about the timing that this virus appeared, because back to the 9/11 thing, 9/11 happened a year after the center, after the Project for the New American Century, the influential neoconservative think tank, published a report about rebuilding America's defenses, as they called it, where they said that what they called the transition towards greater American military strength will require something like a Pearl Harbor event, and a year later they got their catalyzing event. So even back then, the technocrats in charge of the U.S. empire were assessing how the contradictions of capitalism and the potential threats to American hegemony were so great that a drastic event was necessary to maintain hegemony. And looking back at very recent history, we see how in 2019 China was rising as an economic power like never before. Eurasia was slipping out of American control. U.S. influence in the Middle East was waning. There was also a widespread rebellion against U.S. interests and against neoliberalism throughout Latin America. There's also been a rising populist tide in recent years that the Western corporatocracy has been desperate to put an end to. So all of these threats to American interests and to the Western corporatocracy have appeared lately, and so the United States has really needed a new 9/11 event, and that's where the virus has come in. It's all too perfect. And I think that in the coming years, we're going to continue to see events on the magnitude of 9/11 or COVID-19, events that inflame public fear in the American people, and that allow the ruling class to exercise social control. Because the thing about the current dynamics that we're seeing right now is we can call them biopolitics, where the people in charge can push through measures that sound neutral or apolitical because of the their context of countering a virus and helping health, but really this virus is giving the elites an opportunity to push through greater repressive measures and greater censorship, as we're seeing. Well, social media companies have been increasing censorship amid the virus. So to recap, I think this whole show, we're engaged in a great power conflict with China. We're experiencing a decline for the U.S. empire that's resulting in micromilitarism, like is happening as the U.S. continues to bomb Iraq during the pandemic, and as this bombing campaign exacerbates the potential for war with Iran. We're experiencing something of a social collapse as a result of the virus and the subsequent economic crash, and we're seeing as American society descends into paranoia and dysfunctionality, all the while our media holds up China as something that we can project our own society's demons onto. China is the designated villain.
Yes, all too true, Rainer. This novel coronavirus, this COVID-19 pandemic, certainly it behooves us to be suspicious of the timing, as you say. The timing is just too suspicious for words. This really does start to look like a grand solution. 40 years ago, when I was still a young man, the grand solution that the capitalist class came up with to save their asses when they were confronted with another enormous crisis of capitalism was neoliberalism. But it's really looking like in recent years neoliberalism has outlived its usefulness, so to speak, and there are literally uprisings all over the world in the last year against neoliberalism. So they're coming up with something else, a crisis-based solution to the problem that the imperialist edifice that controls three-quarters of the world is crumbling around their ears, and so they're looking for ways to retain power. This reminds me of something else I've been thinking of all during this show, and that is that my way of looking at the world, I look at the world as being in a world war. It's a hybrid, asymmetrical war started by the United States. It's been going on for several years. The enemies of the American empire, such as China, Iran, Russia, those have come under special attacks. In some cases, as we pointed out, genocidal attacks through these sanctions, these onerous sanctions. This seems to be their solution. It's starting to gel, in my mind at least, and obviously, Rainer, in your mind, what is going on here? The geopolitical frame of attack, the geopolitical plan of action that the capitalist class is implementing to solve the problem that their own world-spanning empire is crumbling around them, and how can they save that? Neoliberalism and neoconservatism are no longer being as useful of tools as they once were to the capitalist class, so they're looking for other long-term solutions. And this COVID-19 pandemic seems to be the beginning of that new solution. That's just, in my opinion, more evidence that this COVID-19 virus is something that was created in the demonic laboratories of the American military industrial complex. That's where they're going. And the thing about my concept of the world being at war between the capitalist class and the working class globally is that if we are at war, and we are, and if we as the working class are being attacked by this capitalist class, this criminal capitalist class, we need to expect this. That's the astounding thing, that so many people don't expect it to the point where they are willing to conceive the absurd idea that even talking about this is a conspiracy theory, a wacky, you know, conspiracy theory that people with aluminum foil hats on their heads would come up with. This is not a wacky conspiracy theory that we're talking about here. This is what they do and what they have been doing, the capitalist ruling class of America and the American empire. This is what they have been doing for 70 years. This is what we should expect. And we need to train ourselves to think like people who are at war and people who expect these attacks. It's not on them, really, that they're attacking us. They're doing what they do. They're doing what we should expect them to do. It's really on us, on the working class in the United States and around the world, that we haven't trained ourselves to expect this. We need to start expecting it and start to come up with solutions for fighting back against it, fighting back against these hybrid warfare attacks that they are really carrying out against the entire global working class. China and Iran, they're just examples of places where the working class has more power, at least in China. In Iran, is certainly more of a democratic country where working people have at least some power. And that's part of the reason that Iran is being attacked by the capitalist class in America, by the American empire. We need to expect it, and we need to learn to respond to it. That's the bottom line there. So, Rainer, anything else before we close up?
Yeah, we just said a lot in these last two statements, haven't we? I don't have any more to say.
Okay, dude. I think that's going to be it for tonight's episode. We no longer commit ourselves to 2 hours, so if we're going to close up about 21 minutes and 16 seconds shy of the 2 hours, that's fine. It's been a pleasure. Rainer, thank you so much. You bring such a great new perspective and great new information, great new thought to the show. And, of course, to Bob. Bob had to leave us because he has to get to work by 12. And, you know, over here on the West Coast where Rainer and I sit, It's 8:39, but over on the East Coast where Bob is, it's approaching 12 now. So he had to be at work by 12, so we lost him a few minutes ago. Anyway, also want to thank everybody who listened in, both on the live show here on Friday evening at 11:39 Eastern Daylight Time. Thank you all for listening in, and we will be back at our regular time on Monday evening. Look for us then at 10 o'clock p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, as I said. And until then, you can join us on our Facebook chat, our Facebook page, which is the best way to find us. There is just to put into the search engine election boycott advocates, and we'll come popping up first thing, I'm pretty sure. At least that's the way it was last time I checked it. So you can find us that way and join the page there where you can have discussions about these and other big topics of the day. And also you can check us out at, Bob's good at remembering this website. It's weebly.electionboycott.com, I think it is. Weebly.electionboycott.com. You can find us there. That's weebly.electionboycott.com. Check us out there. If I'm right, hopefully I'm right. I'm getting kind of old here. I just passed my 66th birthday, so memory isn't what it used to be, but I'm pretty sure that that's it. So until next Monday, just a few days away, I want to bid everybody adieu. Thank you, Rainer, and bid you adieu until next time.
Yeah.